This is Tapestry on CBC Radio 1. I'm Don Hill. All of us do it. We dream. And sometimes dreams can teach important lessons, lessons that give meaning to our waking hours. This week's testament comes from Qualicum Beach on Vancouver Island. Lynn Thompson talks about a dream that helped her cope with the death of a close friend. She calls her reflection, "Life is but a dream."
9 years ago, I learned about the power of dreams. One night, I had a life-changing dream. I was looking for my friend Andrew, and I found him in a room alone. As I moved closer, I saw him writhing in agony on his hospital bed. He reached out to me. I drew back in fear and revulsion, and then he cried out. I embraced him. Suddenly, all was calm. He sat up on the bed without tubes in his arms, and he was at peace. I awoke from this dream at dawn, wondering if he had died. I remembered hearing an owl hoot in the woods 3 nights in a row, an omen to me that death was near. In reality, Andrew was in the hospital. I enjoyed visiting him when he was calm and coherent, even when the doctor told him he had only 3 days to live. A week later, he was still alive, raging in resistance to the grip of leukemia. And I was afraid to visit him because I felt so helpless. But the powerful dream had revealed a secret to me, that we can embrace death, not resist it. I returned to the hospital, welcoming the opportunity to sit with him overnight. That night, my dream came to life. I faced my fear of death. I was able to embrace Andrew, hold his hand, talk to him, and thank him. At dawn, he drew 3 deep breaths, and he died. Andrew was 39 years old. The night before his funeral, I stepped outside into the darkness to share my dream with a mutual friend. As I opened my mouth to speak, there was a rush of wings. An owl landed in the tree behind her. I wondered if I was once more dreaming. A few months later, another friend lost control of his motorcycle in Mexico. Instead of celebrating his 30th birthday, he died in a ditch. The next month, another friend committed suicide. As I dealt with these tragedies, I realized that I had begun to mourn a loss I had experienced early in my life. As a child, I had often felt sad and alone. I would cry without knowing why, and then I would be sent to my room. When I was 12 years old, I was surprised to learn that the small stone square in the grass of the cemetery was for my little brother. He had been born prematurely and lived only a single day. Apparently, I had cried all day when my parents returned without my baby brother. I was 5 years old then. At 17, I was a counselor in training at a summer camp. One of the 12-year-old girls was in distress. Many counselors had encouraged her to talk about what was troubling her. But talking wasn't what she needed. Relief came when one of the counselors sat with her for hours, just letting her cry, without having to explain anything. She was comforted. I learned that day of the healing power of tears. After I grew up and moved into my own life, I found healing through accepting my tears and allowing my grief to simply be. I believe that the best preparation for death is living with joy. Of course, there are always moments when joy is gone completely. Those are the moments when I find strength in my faith by daily thanksgiving to my Creator. I am willing to accept each experience as a blessing in my life. 5 minutes after my friend Andrew's last breath, his 9-year-old daughter's watch stopped ticking. 8 years later, when she was 17, she had to endure fresh loss. He was a remarkable young man, her first love. He had fallen asleep while driving, and his car crashed into a truck. He died within 24 hours. I spoke with her mother recently, and we shared the grief and the tragedy. Towards the end of the conversation, she said of her daughter, "She doesn't deserve this." She doesn't deserve this? I was stunned. This simple, familiar statement gave birth to so many questions, primarily why does she not deserve this? To deserve means to be worthy of reward or punishment. I trust there is a divine purpose for which she is worthy. Not everyone is chosen to experience such depth of heartache. I truly believe that we are never given more than we can handle, even when what we're given is death. To me, life and death are not a matter of deserving. They are a given until they are taken from us. There are no guarantees in life or death. We can make all the plans we want, but life and death happen in the meantime. The best I can do is to be the best that I can be, to be fully here until I'm not. Every night, when I lay my head on the pillow, I give thanks for the gift of dreaming. I trust what I see through this window of the divine. The images revealed in my dreams connect with and guide me through my waking world. And when I awake, I remember that it's life that is a dream.
And that's Tapestry for this week. Marika Mayer is the producer. Technical direction provided by Dave Field. The senior producer is Linda Shorten. I'm Don Hill.
We're in Victoria with another ocean view. Lynn Thompson. Hi, Anina.
Hello, Lynn.
We just listened to that famous piece where you were the 9-year-old daughter of your father who died at the age of 39, and we've just listened to it together, and now you've just turned 25. Quite a long time since all of that. And you've made some notes, and we're going to have a later conversation. Where do you want to start?
Just even thinking about the whole experience, I guess the first thing that came to mind was just that it feels very surreal hearing about the dream that you had and just my father and what he went through and that I was part of it, because it seems like a dream to me now.
At 9 years old, you would have a much different perspective, and yet that is the perspective you had of that event. And yeah, it makes me feel a little self-conscious for you as an adult to hear what my experience of your father's death was. And my perspective is my perspective, and your perspective is yours. And I suppose I hope that you're comfortable with my perspective, because it's pretty personal to you, whether it feels surreal to you from this time looking back or not.
Actually, I thought about that afterwards. I could have had a dream about him, or I could have had a story or written about it, but I think in a way I was happy that you had that experience with him, that you were the one that was with him when he passed away. I was too young to even grasp what was going on, and I don't think it would have had the same impact on me that it did on you.
It's coming up 15 years ago, and I was 35. Our mutual friend Margaret was there as well. I mean, that's one of the things, listening to that again. It's interesting how we portray our histories and our stories of things that happened to us. It would seem as if I didn't have siblings when that little baby brother of mine didn't come home from the hospital. There were, in fact, 2 siblings and then 1 born after him. And it would seem that there was only me and your father in the hospital and no one else around, but Margaret was there as well. It's interesting how I told the story in such a way that it was quite a solo experience for me through a lot of those scenes that I described. I wonder about that from my own point of view as a storyteller. It makes me just wonder about how I, but also people in general, tell the stories of their lives.
We all have our own perspectives and our own lenses through which we see the world, right? What I was initially drawn to was the whole thing about dreaming. I think that we are spoken to in our dreams. sometimes I think they're like spaghetti dreams and they're one mumbo jumbo, right? And they don't make sense. But dreams can be very symbolic and real, even more so than a lot of people think, because I think lots of people just disregard them. I think over the years, too, dreams have become more important in my life. But I think that also relates to just life experiences, you know, when you think more about life, when you're faced with death or suffering with friends or family around you.
Do you want to talk at all about your love when you were 17? Did I portray that okay? I wasn't sure about that part, too. Well, I found out about that event through the newspaper in that community and seeing your name connected with him, that he had died, and I altering the name of your father for it as well. Like, I didn't want to go into a lot of detail about it, but this is quite a few years ago now, and you're in a new time of your life. And again, it's my portrayal of something that's very personal to you. How did that feel to you to hear that part of it included?
I mean, it was very basic. I know that we didn't really talk during that time. I remember you sent me a card with those bubbles on the snow, remember? And the day that he died, it snowed and everything was really quiet and you'd taken those pictures. But it's almost as if I was in the position that you were in a little bit, because I was in the hospital when my boyfriend died a few hours before. I mean, it was unexpected, which is different than with my dad, which was more of a drawn-out process. I mean, that's all that you knew, and I think it tied in nicely with the theme. I think that you might have a different story to share if we had a chance to really talk about it or talk about how I was feeling through the ordeal, or, you know, how it affected me over the years. And, I mean, we just reconnected last month. And
yeah, just after I turned 50 and you turned 25, we have a special year of you being half my age and me being twice your age, and our really first opportunity to connect as adults. I've known you since you were, what, about 7 or 8? And I have very distinctive memories of you on the beach where I'd met your dad, because we were neighbors with the community there, the little girl.
Yeah, it's different now. I see you more on a friendship level, too.
Yeah.
Less, oh, there's Lynn, I'm going to go over for cookies or go bug her, you know, and then go run off with my tie-dyed T-shirt on or something. But.
Well, it's a treat for me, too. It's like this unexpected new friendship. It's great.
Thank you so much for sending me that piece. Another thing that stood out to me was the owl.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a similar parallel with that with eagles, actually, too. When my dad passed away, the eagle was a really symbolic bird that kind of came about to be something that I always attributed to him whenever I saw an eagle afterwards. One of his favorite songs was Fly Like an Eagle. And then when my boyfriend had passed away many years later, on his gravestone there was an eagle, and it had a verse from the Bible on it with eagle in it. So ever since then, I've kind of, you know, I've seen eagles and thought, huh, you know, it takes me back to those moments. But even with time, now I look at eagles and the emotions that I had before aren't the same anymore. Kind of distance myself more and more, which I think is a good thing, which I think healing is taking place, right? And crying too, like you said, tears.
Yes, the healing power of tears, indeed. Yeah, that's a pretty big one to embrace and allow.
It was a process for me, I think. For me, I was raised kind of, you know, be strong kind of person. Growing up with my mom, and she was on her own, and she had to kind of fend for herself. And so she was my role model, right? I think I kind of took on that attitude of, you know, I can take it. But I'm crying a lot more lately, just letting it out. So, and not only about death, but just being more real with myself and with other people, too.
Sometimes to me, it just feels like the overflowing of the fullness of it all. There aren't always words for it. I feel very full of joy these days, really enjoying so much of my life. What did you think of that whole aspect of deserving that came up? That is what got me to write that whole piece. That was actually originally a much longer piece for Toastmasters. It was one of my final speeches after doing about 2 years of Toastmasters, a good 7 years ago now. And it was talking with your mother after your love died, and her saying that. That spurred that whole piece of writing. And then it got edited down for Tapestry. I'm still reverberating with that concept myself, so all these years later.
What surprised me was the definition of deserve. I didn't know that it was to be worthy of something. I can totally imagine my mom saying that. She doesn't deserve this, Lynn. You know, she's been through enough, and I can hear her saying that right now. But I don't know. I think we have to go beyond that, though. I mean, I think it's all part of grieving and healing, but it's easy to kind of sink into a why me, like poor me kind of thing. You know, I don't deserve this. But as much as I suffered, I guess, through it all, not so much with my father because I was so young and I don't think it impacted me as much as it did with my boyfriend. I somewhat consider it an honor that I went through it because I think my perspective on life and my friendships, just everything changed so much after it happened. My relationship with my mom even changed. My relationship with her now, I think, is affected hugely by that. And I also think that it wouldn't have happened to me if I couldn't handle it. So it just makes it easier to go through things now and just accept them more and not fight against them so much.
You've grown through and lived through what's happened with your father and your boyfriend, and so you have a different perspective than if you hadn't gone through that, I'm taking from what you're saying, and that, like you just expressed, as it being almost an honor, so that you've seen a benefit to something that could be seen as a tragedy, as a bad thing. You can see that there's good things that have come of it and made you a deeper, more dimensional person than you would have been. So I can see how you would be more embracing of adversity or challenges now.
I think so. And I think events like that too, like thinking back to when my boyfriend passed away, I was very focused on myself and how does this affect my life and me and my way of thinking and everything, but not really realizing there's all these other people that are affected by something like this. As close as I was to him, there was other people in his life too. And then even seeing how it affected them. I mean, as hard as it was, there were so many positive things too. Mm. I guess too, just realizing, you know, there's hope beyond this life. Like you said, to live with joy. I think there's a difference too between happiness and joy. You can have happiness, but I think that's temporal. And my happiness was probably shut out a little bit when those things happened. And my joy a little bit too, maybe. But I think now more so, I think I have more of a sustaining joy and my happiness tends to fluctuate. So,
oh, that's interesting. Just thinking about how, you know, your father died. At the time, I remember thinking, well, I'll just kind of put this experience on hold for a little while to really integrate it until after the Christmas season sort of thing. And then right after the New Year's, that other friend died at 30, and then this other friend committed suicide. And it was like, whoa, what is going on? We're all going to go through that transition from this physical life to the next reality. And I truly believe that there's a lot else going on, that this is a temporary experience, temporal and temporary experience. And I think that each time one of us leaves the company of the rest of us, that it really reminds us of that. Obviously, that's part of our grief, is not only the loss of that person in our experience, the fullness of their life then, the story is complete to that extent, but it's also the reminder of that unknown that we're all moving towards, no matter how we're living our lives. We're all moving towards that one single departure point. So it was quite a deepening time for me with those departures. Yeah. And I've had quite a few friends, peers, you know, die various ways, either self-inflicted or accidental. And although there's the word accident, I don't see things as accidents. I believe that idea that we kind of choose our challenges and coordinates in each lifetime that we come into, even our manner of death, for not only what we personally may need to experience, but those connected and affected, as you say, what is perfect for their experience and depth and growth in the lifetime as well. There's obviously a lot to really understand about it. You know, you get sort of little clues and insights maybe as you go along.
Yeah, I mean, that whole topic of death, it probably varies with cultures too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think here in the Western world, we make it such a big thing. And I think maybe it is because of the unknown that so many people have of afterwards. With my boyfriend, for instance, I was really excited for him when he died, but it sucked for me. before he had passed away, we had talked about heaven and, you know, life beyond being on Earth and it being really exciting. And but when death really faces you, then you really think about it, you know? It's funny, I had an incident a couple months ago. I fell off my bike and I fainted and was out for about 30 seconds, but I honestly thought I was dying. That was such a perspective check for me again. It's like, okay, why are you on this earth and what's your purpose? And I was like, whoa, you know, just a glimmer of that. I mean, it doesn't have to happen like that, or you can just have a moment where you think about this earth being so small in this huge universe, like, whoa, and I'm so little and yet I can experience so many different things. And there's all these little people all over the world, you know, and doing their own thing. And I mean, you can let it get really overwhelming though too, I think.
There's an older lady I've been talking to, I just met recently, and she says that there's spirits, whatever you want to call them, entities lining up to be born onto the planet, to have the physical experience. Compare that to people who are having the physical experience and who are bored, wanting to leave, wanting to kill themselves, having no sense of purpose, no sense of direction with this precious gift of physical life that is unique in that you get to experience such a range, as you say, of emotions and experiences that can only be experienced in a physical form. And sure, it's challenging. And sure, we tend to resist the unpleasant and seek the pleasant, even if it's a total distraction from the pain. It's a real conundrum, this whole physical experience, that it could be such a desired thing for those who don't have it, and such a detested thing sometimes by people who do have it.
Yeah, that just makes me even think about, you know, how we're so driven to work. Go, 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 to the point where it isolates us. Okay, sure, we might have some more money or some more materialistic things, but then I think about our purpose just being in relationship with other people, how we're meant to love each other and have a family, whether it's close family, like blood related or not, we're meant to be in community. And how I think that's, in some areas, it's being lost. And then so people lose hope. And I think hope is a big thing with that. For being bored or for being suicidal or for not wanting to go on anymore, well, what gives you the joy in the morning? And I think different people would give you different answers for that.
Yeah, and the whole thing about suicide is it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And it doesn't really solve any problems. My impression from things I've heard is that it actually perpetuates the problem, doesn't eliminate it. So it kind of puts you back at square one and you got to just go through it again.
I haven't experienced anybody like close to me that has ever committed suicide. I've heard about it. Being in nursing school, you hear about it from the healthcare perspective. You got to think what's going through your mind. Not very many people know this, but I considered suicide when my boyfriend died. I had a plan, which they say is the top thing, the top risk for actually doing it, and it seemed rational to me at the time to just end it all and to be free of this pain that kept going on whenever I woke up in the morning. So in that sense, I guess I can understand it.
It sounds like you can. Those who don't admit it aren't being honest. When I was a teenager, I didn't have a plan, but I didn't really see the point to life, and every day seemed the same. I just assumed that I would just somehow die without me having to actually do it, you know, kind of passively, I would just die. I am so glad I'm still here. I'm so glad that I didn't allow that exit door to show up at that point, because the longer you stick around, the more amazing it gets. I know it's just a short time anyway, in the relative scheme of things. So why not just explore it to the fullest? And now that I'm past the 50 mark, it's almost like a new life. I can have a fresh start. There's more of a distinct mark of what's past and what's now and what's possible. All right. I'm very open to having a whole new life now. Hopefully keeping the body going too to keep up with me.
Well, it sounds like you're excited about it. You hear about people going through a midlife crisis and thinking, oh, well, now I'm on the home stretch. it's kind of encouraging to hear that you are excited about this new step. I didn't really expect it to hear it like that. But kind of starting from square one, even though you've experienced all those things.
I'm just relieved that I still feel such an innocence in spite of everything I've experienced so far, that there's still some things I feel very new at, like relationships. You know, I haven't had children, I haven't been married, pretty short term, brief as it's turned out. I love living by myself. I'm not looking to do a traditional marriage thing, and I certainly am not having children now. How exciting to see what wants to happen, and the longer you stay around, the more can happen, because you're still there to have it happen with.
And just being open, I guess, to new things, right? I mean, going back to the death that happened to my boyfriend, after that I thought, well, I'm single for life. And even up until last year, I thought, well, I'm content to be single, I'll do my thing, you know, I have a lot of fun with myself. And now I'm in a relationship and it's great, but it was so unexpected. You know, you think, oh, what's going on now? This is totally new. It's been 7 years since I've been with someone. But at the same time, it just fits so well, coming from the I'm going to be single the rest of my life girl. So I think other things are going to happen in the future, you know. Then I'm going to have stories to tell you, Lynn. I mean, guess what I'm doing now, Lynn? I'm wherever, right? Doing this or meeting this person or nursing in China. Who knows, right? So
if you're just tuning in, this is Lynn Thompson on Living on Purpose, and I'm speaking with Anina van der Linden, who is half my age. She's 25, and we've known each other since she was, we're figuring about 7 or 8, and a mutual friend, a peer of mine, and I were together with her father when her father died, almost 15 years ago now. And we're reflecting on many things and meeting each other as adults, really, for the first time in the last month, reconnecting. I want to know what turned you around from that feeling of wanting to also die after your boyfriend died. Like, what linked you into re-engaging with life and then got you on track to what you've done since then? So maybe you could start with that and come forward.
A big part of me getting through that whole process was the support of one of my really good friends. At the time, I pretty much moved in with her and her family when that whole thing happened and wasn't living at home anymore, just because I really needed her by my side. And I really felt that she was the same age and she knew him as well, you know, that kind of helped me go through the whole experience. And it was at the end of grade 12 too. And then we ended up going to Bible college together. I never thought I'd go to Bible college. I didn't want to go there, and I wanted to go to university with my boyfriend, but just the way things happened, she was going, you know, and I really needed to get away from where I was living at the time and just remove myself from everything familiar and start new. So I went there for a year, and I remember going back at Christmas time and going back after school was done after the year, and it being so hard again. It felt like I'd never left. But then as years went by, it slowly was easier. I'd see things, it was easier. I'd talk to people, it became easier. So yeah, and then I eventually, through traveling to Australia and India, decided to go to Alberta of all places, because that's where I went to Bible college. And I told myself I'd never go back to the cold prairies, but wanted to go back to school and pursued nursing, and not really knowing why, didn't really know what it was all about, and considered quitting after my first year because I didn't like it very much. But then it goes back to there's a reason that I was there, you know, and now I'm done. And it feels like I just started. So now it's this new chapter of my life, this new transition. And just like you turning 50, I feel like I've turned 25. And now what? What's the saying? The world is my oyster, or something like that. I'm excited about life too. I think we're probably similar in that way, just a little different. Like, I feel like I'm getting older physically too, even at 25. But I still feel young.
Believe me, you are.
Thank you. Yeah, so I think we should do this again when maybe you're 100 and I'm... Let's see.
In 50 years, you'll be 75. You'll be catching up to me.
I don't know. I think it's going to be so neat, though, if we interview each other, as if I'm the interviewer. Welcome to my show. No, but it's been so special, randomly meeting up with Lynn, and it's like, wow. I think we're both discovering new people, in a sense, you know?
it's like we have reference points to know of each other. It's really cool. I'm really pleased to meet you.
Pleased to meet you too.
What is it then that you're launching forward on now that you're 25 and completed your education in Alberta? Here you are back in Victoria. Not back in Victoria. I don't think you've ever lived in Victoria. This is new.
No, this is new. I moved here a couple months ago to do my final nursing practicum at a hospital here, and I start a new job in a few days on the same unit that I was just on. I think I'll commit for a year and do that. My boyfriend right now, he's about to launch into a year-long program too with school, and then we're thinking actually of going to China eventually. He lived there the past 3 years, so he has a heart for that country and for Tibet as well, and we went there over Christmas, so I've experienced a little bit of what it's like. We don't really know the details of it, but that could be a possibility.
Well, I wish you all the best, and we'll be keeping in touch as things unfold, for sure. Where did you meet him, by the way? You're Jordan?
Yes, Jordan. Well, we've actually known each other since grade 5. We went to elementary and junior high and high school together, but we weren't in the same friend crowd, really. So I knew him a little bit in high school, but just kept in touch with email over the years, and then met up last summer kayaking up island. So, yeah, he was just down, and I was home for a little while, and connected, and felt like meeting a new person in him, too, because I didn't really know him.
I sent you a copy of that piece I'd recorded years ago now. I sent that to you just a month ago, I guess. It's been really rewarding getting together, and interesting for me to share that with you now that we've reconnected as adults, because I provided a copy of that for your mother years ago when that was done. That was 5 years ago now that was on CBC. And at that time, I so longed to be on radio, and now I'm 3 years almost on this show. So that just goes to show you how things can come around, even if it's a little later in one's life. Just to circle back to your reflections on listening to that, you were commenting on wondering what it was like from your father's perspective.
I think that's one of the big things that I miss about not having him around, is being able to talk to him. What did he like to do? What were his thoughts? I mean, even when he was dying, you said that he was raging in resistance. Well, what did that feel like for him? You know, was he scared? Was he at peace? What was that? I mean, we're never really going to know. But to know how he experienced his illness, because I remember him many times saying, you know, Anina, I'm going to beat this. I'm going to beat this, and it's going to be okay. And he was very lighthearted about it. But I think he was hurting a lot inside, too, and he knew that he wasn't going to make it, especially in the end there.
That was the impression I had in the dream, but that was also mirroring what I was hearing at that point from the hospital experience, that after he'd been told he only had a few days, like at that point, you know, he said, oh, let's go out for a smoke. I mean, he was lighthearted about it, you know. I mean, he was still alive, even though they gave him that determination on his condition that they really couldn't do anything else. But then when he was moved up to the other hospital, I was hearing that he was being very resistant and ornery and difficult because he was resistant. I wasn't sure how to deal with that in terms of going. And yeah, I mean, it's a big wonder what that was like for him. I mean, he was so independent and so strong. It must have been really a huge challenge for him to submit to that and realize that he couldn't fight it and he couldn't beat that.
And I think, too, he wanted to be tough for me, maybe to try and make it easier on me. I'm trying to think back, I think my mom told me at one point that he broke down and just started weeping in her arms. Or was that a dream? It kind of blurs together. I think she saw a lot of that side of him, maybe, and maybe his friends too. We haven't even really talked that much about the words he spoke even to you in those last few days, or if he could even speak or anything.
Well, that was the thing, you see, was that by the time Margaret and I were there that night, the family and friends were taking turns being with him then. He wasn't able to speak or anything. He was pretty much in a coma at that point. As I said in that recorded piece, we took turns sitting with him. Margaret was actually sitting with him. I was taking a bit of a break in the easy boy chair in the room. But I remember him taking those last few breaths. He hadn't been able to fully breathe, like to deeply breathe, in quite a while, apparently. And it was like at the last, at dawn, he took those three deep breaths. And then that was it. And it was like, wow. Like, I had never been with someone when they died. I've only been with one person when they died and one person when they were born. And it's so remarkable that we can ignore the breath like we do, because it's what sustains us. Without the breath, we're not here. That's what makes the flesh alive. I don't know if I told you this, but when he had died, Margaret stayed with him, and I went to make some calls. I actually went to your grandparents, where they were staying in the nearby hotel, and told them that he had passed, and then they came, and friends came, and you came, and your mom came, and we were all gathered in the room with him. And the nurses were pretty amazed, because usually they said people leave, right? They don't know what to do then. It's a body now. It's not their loved one. Anyway, and then after a while, groups of the family and friends took turns being in the room and sort of saying goodbye to him. And then everybody was leaving the room. And I was standing in the room thinking, wait a minute, we can't all leave. You know, we've all just spent time being here with him. And so I stayed in the room. I stood beside him, beside the bed, and I was looking at him and thinking, wow. I just felt like I needed to make some kind of gesture, you know? And so I put my hand on his forehead, and it was like I'd put my finger in an electric socket. It was like this huge charge of energy came flowing through my hand. And I was so surprised. I mean, this was news to me. I mean, he had died. What was this, right? Anyway, I went back to my place that night, and my friend brought me this book by Stephen Levine, I believe, about there is no death, or, you know, something about this. And in that book, that same night, I read a description of a father who had come to his child's deathbed and hadn't got there in time before the child died, and did a similar thing. Apparently, the energy leaves through the head. That's the portal. And so it takes a while for all the energy of the body to leave. And then, in fact, that time that we did spend with your father's body after he had died, it's the most precious time to spend that time before it's taken away and death is rearranged and masked and made to look like someone sleeping. And just to be with that and allow that time together to usher the departure. A life-altering experience.
I bet it was. It actually makes me think about nursing and how I've cared for a few patients who have passed away. And I've actually never been in the room when they passed, but I've been in there maybe 5 minutes later. Mm. Mostly when family's there, but also when family's gone, and I'll just stand there or hold their hand. Or I don't know, it's kind of an eerie feeling, but then at the same time, it's hard to even describe. Kind of special too.
Back to that honoring business, I think.
Yeah, we're being worthy of that experience. Yeah.
Anina, all the best. And thank you so much for being my guest on Living on Purpose. Oh, and to sum up, what does living on purpose mean to you?
Taking every day to its fullest, knowing why you get up in the morning. I mean, for me, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus, and I believe that God is orchestrating everything in my life right now, and there's a reason for everything, and he has a destiny for me every day, who I meet or what I do and what I see. So living on purpose is surrendering to that, surrendering to him and being open and having joy, I guess, and allowing the sucky days to come and dealing with them too, right? So,
well, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you, Lynn. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you very much.